Good evening, and welcome to Valley Voices, where we bring you conversations covering all things local, from news, politics, and government, to culture and community issues that are relevant to Lehigh Valley residents. I'm your host, Margaret McConnell, the executive director here at WDIY, and joining me tonight is Representative Peter Schweier, who serves Pennsylvania's 134th Legislative District, which includes portions of Allentown, Emmaus, and Western Salisbury. As chair of the House Education Committee, he plays a key role in shaping policy on public education and school funding in the Commonwealth. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
So let's start with education.
Great. Let's do it.
Okay.
Because what could possibly be wrong? Everything's wonderful. Everything's great. I feel fantastic. But also, thank you for having me. I don't know if your listeners know this, but we've known each other for a minute or two. Mm-hmm. So I will try my best to be a grown-up, but also it might be a little hard.
It's all right.
Thanks.
We're gonna get through it.
Right. I'm in.
All right. So obviously we know parts of the representation of your district is public schools.
Yep.
One of them is Allentown School District.
Yep.
Let's talk about what's happening right now with funding.
Sure. Yeah. So my district is the Allentown School District, Salisbury School District, and the East Penn School District. And my daughters are students in the Allentown School District. My oldest is graduating from Allen this year. My youngest will be at Allen next year.
She at South Mountain now?
She is at South Mountain, yeah. Yeah. So I know you're a DRF girl.
Yeah, but I went to South Mountain.
Right. So we could still be friends. And there's literally a point in my district, basically where the Giant is on Emmaus Avenue, where the three school districts come together. Emmaus is on one corner, Salisbury is on another, and Allentown has the other two corners. When you walk into the East Penn School District and Emmaus High School, they have engineering programs, architecture programs. They have brand new facilities. Their pool is great. They have all this stuff. They have an emotional support dog that walks around the school.
Get out.
It's fantastic. It's great. It's the kind of place every parent should want to send their kids. Salisbury High School is in a floodplain. So they have significant issues when it comes to mold remediation. They've needed upgrades to security. But they're still fully staffed. There's no major vacancy rate there. So whereas there are significant needs at Salisbury, they're still able to do all of the things that their families would expect of them. Then you go to Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas I love the faculty that's there. My daughter has had a great experience. She's off to Penn State after, you know, going through her college search process. She got into University Park. She's going to be studying finance. You can do extremely well at Allen, but we don't have those opportunities. And for me and my family, you know, I could backfill the stuff that we didn't have. When my daughters wanted to take dance, they took dance. When my younger daughter, Erin, wanted to study art, I was able to pay for bomb school. You know, they have every MacBook and all that stuff that they need. I could do those things.
Right.
Because I'm fortunate enough to be a middle-class person. But if you're not, if you don't have those extra means at home, you really rely on your public school to provide them. And frankly, right now, Allentown can't. Mm. And so literally at one intersection in Lehigh Valley, we see three types of schools that are very indicative of the education system in Pennsylvania. That led to a lawsuit that started 12 years ago that was just adjudicated and settled basically last year that said that the way that we fund our schools is unconstitutional. Because literally, again, in one intersection,
right,
you can see that, right? And so we went about changing the way that we fund education last year. So we're very careful on using language. We don't believe in leveling the playing fields. I frankly think that's stupid. Because candidly, when you use that phrase, what you're talking about is taking away from the top to try to backfill what everybody else has. That's not our goal. We want to bring everybody up to the same level. And so the goal with the additional funding and the way that we structured our funding is that the school districts that are at risk because of population concerns, because of funding concerns, because of facilities, because of tax rates and all kinds of different things, will get added dollars to try to get them to that level. And then there's actually a growing concern of school districts, many of whom are in the Lehigh Valley, frankly, including the East Penn School District, that are growing at such a rapid rate that their local tax effort can't keep up.
Mm.
Because, you know, you can't drive through Lower McCunchy Township and not run into 17 new developments, 17 new housing developments popping up somewhere. And the school district can't actually keep up with the growing demand there. So even school districts like Parkland, like East Penn, got a little bit of these additional dollars to help them keep pace with the demands. Mm. The total gap in funding is $4.5 billion.
Wow.
We did not allocate $4.5 billion last year. It was a great year in funding. We did $1.2 billion, but we did $500 million towards that gap. And so it's a 9-year phase in plan. Governor Shapiro has proposed year two that will continue that funding, and we feel confident that it'll dramatically improve test scores and what we call student outcomes. And I get a little jargony at times. I apologize for that. What we're really talking about is investing money so that our kids can succeed. Mm-hmm. We worry about, you know, are our kids studying math and science and literacy? Are they learning the tools that they will need and the skill sets that they will need to be able to be professionals, whether they go off to college, military, or trade schools, or go into the workforce right away? We really need to truly prepare these kids. So all of these dollars are directly linked to student outcomes and things that we know will make a difference in their lives.
Okay. All right. So where are these investments going?
You know, as a multi-generation Allentown kid, as somebody who's an ASD parent, one of the things that absolutely drives me nuts is when I will hear very well-minded or very well-intended human beings say things like, well, we just got to blow up the school district and start all over again. I'm like, yeah, but you're not saying that in Parkland. Mm-hmm. You're not saying that in East Penn. You're not saying that in Nazareth. Why are you saying that in Allentown? And the answer is they don't know why. They recognize that there is a deficiency there. And really, you know, I remember I used to work for Sacred Heart Hospital, and I'd be talking to my old boss there, and he'd say something like that. I'm like, how comes you haven't asked a parent what we want? And inevitably, he'd be like, all right, well, what do parents want? We want new technology. We want teachers in our classroom. We want facilities where the paint isn't peeling. We want to make sure our kids are able to go to a school that's safe. We don't want 40 kids in a classroom. That's no different than what parents want in East Penn, Parkland, Nazareth, or any of the higher performing school districts. And we know that those are the things that actually work. So those additional dollars, that $500 million last year, hopefully $500 million this year, grand total of $4.5 billion when the plan's all complete, is directly linked to number of teachers in a classroom. School districts can use it for curriculum. School districts can use it for textbooks and technology. And they could use it for after-school supports, tutoring programs. They could use it for mental and behavioral health. They could use it for school facilities. They could use it for the things that we know work. They can't use it to build a new athletic field. Mm. They can't use it to pay for 5 more administrators. All of those dollars have to be used for school buildings and all of the stuff that happens within a school.
Okay. So what's the impact with charter school funding? When you just said the word about sports athletic facilities, it made me think of the executive charter school, which is going to build a sports complex.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing. But how is that impacting what the public school systems are able to do?
Yeah. So there are really two types of charter schools. I could actually go deeper than that, but for the sake of this conversation, there are the cyber schools and the bricks and mortar. Now, I'm going to be very careful how I say this, not because I'm trying to be too cute or that I'm ever really truly worried about what I say, but I just want to be as accurate as I can be. Brick and mortar schools are organized as public schools that the host school district has oversight over. So Executive Academy, for example, or Roberto Clemente, or the Elementary Arts Academy, or Lincoln Leadership, those are all in the city of Allentown. And the Allentown School District has oversight over them to the degree of renewing their charter every couple of years. They can put caps on the number of students that can be enrolled there. So whereas there are kids from Bethlehem and Catasauqua and East Penn and wherever else that send their kids to these schools, the actual district and where they reside has a level of oversight on them. And that leads to some more collaboration between the districts and these charter schools. To be clear, I don't like the way that they're funded. I mean, I've been highly critical of the way that we pay for charter schools. I've been highly critical of how we allow non-educators in the field into this world, which happens all over the place in the Lehigh Valley. But there's at least some level of oversight with them. There is no oversight on the cyber schools. Huh. None. There is not a bigger fraud in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania than the cyber education program. First and foremost, cyber schools are not overseen by a local school district. They're overseen by the Department of Public Education, which is woefully understaffed to understand what's going on. That's number one. Number two, cyber schools don't need to have 100% of their teachers as certified educators. By the way, neither do bricks and mortar. But on average, only about 75% of teachers in cyber schools are actually certified educators. But the biggest catastrophe of them all, well, there's two. Okay, I'm lying. There's three. There are three major areas of concern with cyber schools. Number one, the way all of our charter schools go, brick and mortar or cyber work, is that you have a kid who's enrolled in a school district, pick one. We'll just say Northern Lehigh. Kid from Northern Lehigh goes to Arts Academy. The school district sends them a tuition check. If they go to a cyber school, that same student could go to a cyber school instead, and they get the same tuition check. Now, they get the same tuition check, but they don't really have a lot of buildings. Actually, they do, but they don't have school buildings. Mm-hmm. Their cost is a teacher sitting at home using the same kind of technology that all school districts used during COVID. That was not great. They don't have athletic programs. They don't have theater. They don't have drama. They don't have any of those other things. They don't have debt. They don't have all of this. Yet we pay them the same amount that we pay everybody else. That just becomes cash to the bottom line of the parent companies. That's number one. Problem number two with the cybers is the way that they deal with special education students or students with special education needs. So your kid's diagnosed with autism. Your child is diagnosed with some kind of significant learning disability. School districts and bricks and mortar charter schools have a series of paraprofessionals, interventions, or IUs do a lot of work with that. There is an added cost to the school district for that. A student who is not a high-functioning person with autism might be in a classroom where the rules are you need one teacher for every four kids. And so therefore, you need a lot more teachers to address that population. So there's a cost involved to it. You send a child to a cyber school, they have one rate. But if that child has a special education need, they get a significantly larger tuition check to the tune of sometimes $10,000 more.
Wow.
So what that actually means in practice is that there's a financial incentive for these cyber schools to identify a child with special needs because they get a bigger paycheck because of it. So I have a 13-year-old daughter. She'd be 14. Let me tell you, 13-year-olds, not always sane. They're kind of crazy. And my daughter is an angel, but let's be honest, just in case she listens. However, 13-year-olds are banana pants.
Right.
These kids are nuts. That doesn't mean that they have ADHD. That doesn't mean that they have OCD issues. That doesn't mean they have hearing disabilities just because they choose not to listen. It just means they're 13 freaking years old, right? But what will happen is that kid will go to a cyber school and magically they'll get what's called an IEP, an individualized education plan. They get an IEP, and now all of a sudden they're getting an extra $10,000 payment paid for by your property taxes and mine. Mm. And now also that kid who's just a 13-year-old kid who might be a little hyperactive now has a special education and a mental health diagnosis that will stay with that child in perpetuity. The Allentown School District has, as the biggest school district and the most at-risk school district in Lehigh Valley, has about 18% of our kids have special education needs, about 18%. Commonwealth Charter Academy, which is the biggest cyber provider in Pennsylvania, they have about 65% of the market share, has 32% of their students have IEPs. There is not a school district in Pennsylvania where a third of their kids have special education needs. There's not.
Yeah.
So they have this financial incentive to misdiagnose kids all the time. The third and most offensive one to me, no, maybe not offensive. One of the other very real challenges with it, there's no public disclosure of how they do anything. They don't have to publicly bid contracts. Hmm. So imagine, you know, the insert name of school district here. Imagine Salisbury needed new textbooks and they didn't go out and get three bids for textbooks. Imagine if they needed to put new windows in all of their buildings and they didn't go out and ask for three bids on the contract to get the lowest and best price. We would be up in arms about it.
Right.
The cyber schools, again, 100% paid for by public money, taxpayer money, don't have to get publicly bid. So I could own a cyber school and be like, hey, my brother sells computers. He's just going to get the contract for the computers. Mm. There is no accountability. Mm. So it is a major drain on our public schools. And I think all of us would, relatively speaking, be okay or at least accept all of those things if the kids were learning better.
Right.
Commonwealth Charter Academy, which is the 65% of the entire market share in Pennsylvania again, they have 32,000 kids enrolled in their schools. We have 17 in Allentown.
Wow.
They have more kids enrolled in Commonwealth Charter Academy than they do in Reading, in the Pittsburgh school districts, by far.
Wow.
To the tune of 10,000 kids more. Their proficiency rates, the amount of their students that are making annual proficiency on mathematics, is under 5%.
Wow.
95% of their students are failing at mathematics.
Wow.
And so we're giving them hundreds of millions of dollars a year, and only 5% of their kids actually have the skills that they need to go in the workplace. If that happened in any public school, if that happened at the poorest elementary school in Allentown, we'd be out there with pitchforks.
Yeah.
But we're not, because we just like, oh, yeah, we, you know, I don't blame a parent for pulling them out of insert name of town here. It's insane. So we are we took a big swing at them last year. We put a little bit of manners on their funding, a little bit of openness and transparency, but we didn't go nearly far enough. So the House is going to be set by sometime, I'm guessing, in May to pass a major overhaul of our cyber education packet.
Okay, so there's still work to be done there.
Oh, yeah.
That's on the docket. So let's talk about potential dismantling of the Federal Department of Education and how that is going to trickle down to the states.
Yeah. So our purview in the Education Committee, and again, I have the honor of serving as chair of the Education Committee, is sort of, I'll say, 2.5-fold. We do a little bit of work in pre-K, but that's divided up amongst a couple of committees. We do all the work in K-12 space. So your public schools, your charters, your private schools, et cetera, et cetera. We do all the policy work there. We also do all the policy work in higher education. My read, and I want to be clear that these are very much my words and nobody else's, of the chaos that's coming out of Washington, D.C., is less about any policy changes that anybody's actually trying to do and more about distraction and media coverage than anything. So when the president created his executive order to begin dismantling the U.S. Department of Education, he can't legally do that. Like, it's an act of Congress that right. created U.S. Department of Ed. So they can't actually do that. But you can break something without getting rid of it. So one of my favorite movies of all time is It's a Wonderful Life. So one of the great scenes when there were runs on the bank during the Great Depression, right? And, you know, Uncle Billy locked the doors for Bailey's savings and loan. The money was deposited in there at their bank, but they literally shut the doors down so people couldn't get the money.
Mm-hmm.
So when you will hear, I'll just say, generically speaking, members of Congress, online pundits, the brilliance that is the world of TikTok and Twitter, because obviously all the experts are there, tell you that the president and Congress is not defunding the programs. They're just changing where they're going. In effect, what that means is your money's deposited at the bank, but there's no teller there anymore for you to take a withdrawal. And so what we're seeing in all three phases that we cover, pre-K, K-12, and higher ed, That's what they're doing. They're not actually taking money away from it. They're just making it impossible for you to get it in all three phases. In pre-K, about a week before you and I are sitting down for this conversation, Margaret, the United States Department of Education fired everybody who does work in Head Start.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, is right. Now, they don't fire teachers, right? So our Head Start providers here in the Lehigh Valley, and we all know who they are, they work for the provider. They don't work for the federal government. But if you need to get your money from the federal government because you have a contract with them that the feds are going to give you X amount of dollars, what that means is there's going to be layoffs. There's going to be delays. There are going to be real problems. When you go to drop your child off at daycare, that's going to be a major problem. So again, they didn't defund the program. They just made it harder for you to get the money. The K-12 space. There are, again, at the time of this conversation, because things are changing regularly.
Rapidly, not regularly.
Honestly, it's hour by hour. I thought governing during COVID was tough. This is actually in many ways harder. Not as life and death in the United States as COVID. I don't want to minimize, you know, a million Americans dying. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying from the ever-changing nature of it all. In the K-12 space, they're talking about literally taking money back that was already given to our schools. They are threatening all of our funding. In Pennsylvania, we get about $1.6 billion of federal funding for this. And they're not saying we're defunding it. They're just adding all of these strings attached that never existed before. And I fundamentally believe, and I remember when Republicans used to believe, that local control of education mattered. Because, like, somebody from rural Pennsylvania has different community needs than somebody in Philadelphia, right? And we understood and acknowledged that. And I respect you. You respect me. We'll just give you money and figure it out, right? Well, the federal government obviously doesn't believe this anymore. So they're trying to put on all these new stupid rules that nobody understands. And that's putting us at risk of another $1.6 billion. So we have early childhood that's at risk. We have our all of our schools. And by the way, every charter school gets this money too. So it's not just the Allentown school districts and the, you know, rural Bedford school districts or anywhere else. But what is the scariest is the one that's not being talked about the most. Maybe it's scariest because my daughter's going to college next year, but they're doing the exact same thing with your federal student loans. So about half of the people that do work in processing federal student loans have been fired. So if you are going to college, and I assure you, college ain't cheap these days, and you're looking to borrow money from the federal government, usually a tune of about $5,000 a year, ballpark of what you're realistically going to get, most at least middle class or working class folks, yeah, you ain't getting it. You're going to get it eventually, we think. But there's a gap in time. So there's a cash flow problem for any business person or a person at home that lives paycheck to paycheck. Let's listen to this. If you're going to get your paycheck, but you can't and you need your paycheck to pay the rent, if your boss comes to you and says, hey, I'm going to pay you next week, good luck telling your landlord, my boss is just giving me a week to pay it. You know, I'll pay you when I get my paycheck. Your landlord is going to say, absolutely not. You're paying me today.
Yeah.
Well, colleges are doing that to students. They're like, we know the federal government, or we believe the federal government and the Trump administration are going to give us the check. But at some point in time, we need you to pay us. So kids are taking out gap loans, bridge loans. Almost always, they're just opening up a new credit card at 28% interest rates. And they're borrowing $5,000 from the credit card, paying off their school. They're accumulating all these interest rates, which are, by the way, not tax deductible, and hoping that the federal government gets the money to them. They have a signed contract they're going to get. They're hoping they're going to do it. So all of the things that are happening in D.C. when it comes to the Department of Education are having real-life implications from a 3-year-old to a 23-year-old in the spectrum of education. They are having real-life implications on our colleges, our school districts, our charter schools, even the ones I don't like, our pre-K programs, and most importantly, all of the individuals and families that they serve. I don't want anybody to be fooled when they say we're not cutting funding. We're just eliminating the department, getting rid of bureaucracy. That's absolute BS. What they're doing is that they're making it harder for you to get the money that you're entitled to.
So it's just sitting there.
Yep. It's a great little parlor trick. And, you know, honestly, in the first Trump administration, they did this in other areas of the world. We just never thought that the cruelty and the stupidity and the damage would be pushed in this direction. I just never in a million years would have thought it.
Yeah.
And so if you ever hear or if you ever go listen to, again, a Twitter pundit or a talking head on cable news or, frankly, any politician tell you that, no, we're not cutting funding. They're not. They're just making it really, really freaking hard for you to get it.
So what, as we're wrapping up here today and our time is running out so quickly, tell me, what is your long-term vision for educational equity?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Let me just start with this conversation has been a lot of radio doom scrolling. We're talking about all the challenges. the good news is, and I mean this in all honesty, Harrisburg is not Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
There is a much greater sense of shared purpose between Democrats and Republicans. You know, Pennsylvania is a weird state. Our governor is a Democrat. The state house where I serve, it has a Democratic majority by exactly one vote. And the state Senate has a Republican control of three or four votes. And so we are forced by the very nature of representing a purple state in Pennsylvania to work together. I have excellent, excellent relationships with my Republican chair in the House. The Republican chair in the Senate and I are personal friends that had served together previously when she was a House member. Our staffs all get along. And so the good news is at least Harrisburg is still functioning. And when the overwhelming majority of education policy and funding for education is local, and by local I mean Pennsylvania and local school districts, it allows us to control our fate and deal with the lunacy of D.C., knowing that there are real challenges and problems that are coming from it, but it is in some ways some of it is manageable. Certainly not all of it. If the D.C. eliminates the $1.6 billion of funding for special education kids in Pennsylvania, I can't fill that money. That money's just gone.
Yeah.
But there are things that we can control in Harrisburg that are making that will continue to make our schools more productive, more efficient. And so as we continue to fund our adequacy gap between school districts, we are seeing real changes. In the Allentown School District, for example, and I don't want to keep harping on it, but they're obviously the biggest in the Lehigh Valley. Not only are those in my home district, but they're the biggest. And they're, in many ways, if Allentown School District were to collapse, it'll have ramifications on every other school district, property values, businesses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Allentown School District is building a new middle school for the first time since the mid-1900s. Our bond rating in the Allentown School District increased by 2 full points as a result of the new money that the state put into it. That means that they're also going to be able to replace several more school buildings. They have hired back dozens and dozens of teachers. There's new related arts programs that are going in. We have an incoming class of something like 160 kindergartners who all have some level of a special need. I believe a bunch of them have varying degrees of autism diagnoses. And the school district is able to deal with those challenges. There is, as a parent, what I see as a person, not looking at data or anything like that, we have more and more kids that are involved in sports. We have more and more kids that are involved in band and theater and all of these things. Parents are coming out to parents' nights in droves that I haven't seen as a parent in the district in 12 years.
Wow.
And so there's an obvious and real sense of renewed optimism with a school district that, let's be honest, the reason why I went to Catholic school is because 1992, my mom didn't have confidence in the district, which, you know, just goes to show that that narrative has been around for Allentown for 30 or 40 years. Mm. So I am confident, and I'm seeing both anecdotally and looking at test scores, that all of our investments are turning out a higher caliber student, no matter what side of Emmaus Avenue they were born on.
That is really, really good to hear as a Allentown School District graduate myself. Well, we're out of time. We could keep talking about this. I know that. But thank you for being here, Pete, and sharing this important legislative information.
Happy to do so. Thank you.
With that, we'll say goodnight. Thank you for listening to WDIY at 88.1 FM.